Hi, everybody.
Hello. Hi, Allison.
I'm really glad you're here. Thanks for coming. I feel fortunate that I have support people from two different meetings that I go to, and feels really wonderful to have that kind of support. I appreciate you coming, and all the rest of you too. But I am not accustomed to having that kind of support, so I'm trying to let it in and get used to that feeling. A lot of good feelings, new stuff since I have started my recovery journey. The first night that we had speakers, I was so touched and so inspired and that I went home afterward and decided I heard their stories and I decided I wanted to write my story. Partly in case I ever got asked to speak. And I stayed up till 3 o'clock that night in the morning and wrote 8 pages. I mean, I just was typing away. And so this is part of that story that I wrote at the time. I was born the youngest of 3 children to 30-year-old parents. My sister is the oldest, my brother in the middle, and then me. At the time of my birth, my mother got sick, so both in the hospital for 2 weeks. Back then, in the 40s, they didn't keep the babies with the mothers, but in the nursery, bringing baby to mom only for feeding. This means that my earliest experience was of being isolated and abandoned for those 2 very important first weeks. I did not learn of this situation until I was an adult, but it explains a lot. My parents met, married, and bought a house and had us kids in the Bay Area. When I was 2, my dad was transferred and we moved to Portland, Oregon for his job. My mother had friends and family in the Bay Area and was never happy in Portland. She was never able to make the kind of friends in Portland that she'd had in California. She begged Dad to move the family back to California, but he stubbornly refused. They owned and lived in that house in Portland for 30 years. By the time I was 2, my brother and sister were both off at school, and I was home alone with my mom. She was always busy with various projects. She finished her college degree, for example, by correspondence. She never paid any attention to me, never played with me, or did anything with me. I was sent outside to play alone. At that time, there were no other kids my age in the neighborhood, so I roamed around and rode my tricycle up and down the street by myself. I became very attached to that tricycle. It was my only friend, and it got me around. There was a fitting in the handlebars that became loose occasionally, and that I would ask my dad to fix when he got home from work, and he always did, except for one time. That time, I went down to the basement to see how the repair job was going, and I discovered my mom and dad in the workshop taking the tricycle apart. I was appalled. I asked what was happening and was told that they were getting rid of it because it had been repaired so many times that it couldn't be fixed anymore. They had said nothing to me to prepare me, had not consulted me, said nothing to comfort me. I wondered when, if ever, they would have told me. I guess when I came around wondering where my tricycle was the next time I was ready to go out for a ride. It was like that frequently in our house. Communication did not happen, and we just had to figure out things or find out after the fact or by accident. Home did not feel like a safe place for me. My experience of growing up was that I was always wrong, no matter what I did. I was criticized, corrected, punished, left out, teased, ridiculed, shamed and blamed, abused physically, psychologically, and spiritually. My mother would spank me with her hand, both over my clothes and on my bare bottom. The things she was angry about were often things that were typical kid behavior, like getting into her makeup or writing on the wall. For particularly heinous crimes, she would get Dad to spank me again after he got home, and he hit even harder. On several occasions, she would sit down in a chair and instruct me to go get a wooden coat hanger and bring it to her. The first time she did this, I thought I was being helpful, bringing her something she needed. Then she put me over her knee and beat me with the wooden hanger. I was maybe 4. If I would cry because my feelings were hurt or if I had hurt myself outside, I would go to my mother for comfort, as children do. She would say, "Go away until you're finished crying, then come back and tell me about it." From that, I learned not to cry in front of other people. It was really hard to allow myself to cry in group therapy as an adult. I often cry with no sound, just the tears running down my face. My brother, whom my mother singularly worshipped just because he was the boy, was allowed to tease, torment, and beat me up at will throughout my childhood. He would trip, hit, sock, flip, wrestle, pin me down, put holds on me, tackle me, mock me. He called me fat, ugly, stupid, and spastic, among other insults. He said things like, "If your brains were gasoline, there wouldn't be enough to run an ant's motorcycle," which actually is quite clever, but it was an insult. I internalized what he told me about myself. When I went to my mother to complain about his treatment of me, she said, "I must have done something to provoke him." So essentially it was my fault that he was abusing me. This childhood experience taught me two things. I was a totally worthless person, because he said so. And my body was not my own. That is, any man was entitled to do anything he wanted to my body at any time, and I didn't have the power or right to object, resist, or say no, or to prevent it, because he was a man. My mother was allergic to dust, so was my sister and I, who did the house cleaning. All the vacuuming and dusting. One day when I was about 4 or 5, before I had officially joined the cleaning crew, my sister was cleaning and I asked if I could help. She showed me how to dust down the stairs, getting the dust cloth between all the little balusters, however you pronounce it, that held up the banister. There were 3 on each step and along the outside edge of each step. I did as she showed me, from the top of the stairs to the bottom, dusting each shiny mahogany step with my dust cloth. When I had finished, I told her to come and check. I was so proud of the job I had done. She came to look at it and said, "What a crummy job you did. You didn't do it right at all. Now I'm just going to have to do it all over again myself." I was devastated and also confused. I knew I had done a good job. And yet here was my older sister, twice my age, telling me I had done it wrong. So that must be what's true, and yet I didn't think it was true. How could I have been so mistaken about the job I did? That experience completely turned me off to doing any chore from then on. I was going to get criticized even if I did it right, and I learned to doubt my own perception. On Saturdays, I was to clean my own room. I was about 5 or 6. After I cleaned my room, I was allowed to go outside and play. I had until 6 p.m. to get it done. Mom would go back in the kitchen and do whatever she was doing, and she said, "Call me when you get finished." And so I cleaned as best I could, a little child, unassisted and unguided, and went to get her, and she would come in, look around without saying anything, and she would silently point to something that was either not cleaned correctly or needed to be done over. The criticism, I hated those inspections, and the criticism broke my heart when I had done the best I could as just a little kid. When my work passed inspection, still nothing was said. She would just leave the room, and I had to guess that I had passed inspection and could then go out and play. In other words, the best I could get from her was nothing at all. So it was criticism or nothing. After a few weeks, I was so distressed by her response, in addition to the lack of support, guidance, praise, companionship, or encouragement of any kind, that I froze. I didn't clean my room, I just couldn't. I played in my room by myself until at 6 o'clock, Mom came in. She would sit on the bed, count to 10, while I furiously continued to clean. Then she would put me over her knee, give me 10 spanks on my bottom while I finished cleaning, and kept repeating that until I was done. This went on for several weeks. To this day, I have a stress response to the sound of a vacuum cleaner, and I don't like cleaning or any household chores. Little wonder. If I'm in a restaurant and they start vacuuming, "How can you do that? Don't you know that upsets people?" Oh, maybe it's only me. One summer day, our family went on an outing to a lake. I was maybe 7 or 8. It was shady near the shore, and there was a swimming platform further out where it was sunny. I wanted to go out to the swimming platform, and I was capable of swimming, but I was reluctant to get in that cold water. So I hatched a plan. There were these inner tubes around. I'd sit on the inner tube. I said to Mom, "Would you just, you know, kick me out, swim me out to the swimming platform?" "Sure, I'll do that." So I got in the inner tube, and about halfway there, she tipped the tube over, dumping me in the water. Of course, I was, you know, because cold water. It seemed deliberate, so I asked her if she had done it on purpose. She said yes, and said that she had done it because she thought I should get in the water and swim to the platform myself. It became difficult to trust my mother, even when she appeared to be kind, loving, and helpful. There were promises that were made that were not kept. I was told when my sister went away to college, I inherited her room, and there were parts of the wallpaper that weren't glued on well anymore. And my mom said, how would you like to take the wallpaper off and you can paint the room any color you want? And I said, great, I'd love to do that. I like pink and gray. And I wanted the walls pink and the woodwork, no, the walls gray and the woodwork pink, and I'd paint my dresser pink and all the other wooden furniture pink as the contrast. Oh no, you can't do that. Can't paint the walls and woodwork two different colors. But you said I could paint it any color I wanted. Well, you gotta pick one, pink or gray. So she wouldn't back down. I painted the wall gray. There were some pink throw pillows, I think, and even the furniture was gray, and I never liked it. Interestingly, a few years later, they were repainting the living room, and guess what? They painted the walls blue and the woodwork white. Two different colors. Seemed like there was a double standard in our house. When my sister, older sister, got contact lenses, oh, I thought that was going to be great. I wanted to have contacts, not have to wear glasses anymore. And my parents said, save up your money, and when you can pay for half, we'll pay for the other half and help you get contacts. I saved up my money. It took several years. I went to them all excited. Let's go get me fitted for contacts, like you said. You know, what are you talking about? We never made such a promise. And they simply could not be trusted, not for good things anyway. So that was disappointing. My mother was probably clinically depressed. Because of our separation during the first few weeks of my life, we never really bonded. She needed a scapegoat, and I was the perfect candidate because she was not that attached. I could be sacrificed at no cost to her. I was little and defenseless. The others were older and more attached, so it would not have worked to try to sacrifice them. So I was elected to be the family scapegoat and got blamed for everything bad. My father was much kinder and nicer, and I had a better relationship with him, but he abandoned me too in his own way. He said that he thought when I was a baby that I was the cutest thing he ever saw, but that I was hard to get close to. Difficulty with attachment, I guess. Imagine that. So he gave up on being close to me. He gave up on me. Also, he did not protect me from my mother or my brother. So in a way, I felt betrayed by him too. Skipping on down, becoming a people pleaser. Growing up, I didn't like to do the chores because of the criticism, and the only reward for completing a chore was another chore to do. I procrastinated, didn't do my homework, got a C average. I was insecure, had low self-esteem, and judged myself harshly. I craved the love and attention, affection, and approval, but was terrified of intimacy, which caused me to chase people who weren't really emotionally available and to run from people who were. I was a people pleaser, being nice and compliant to win love, sure that if people knew the real me, they wouldn't like me because of my previous experience. I internalized the critical parent, was paralyzed by the internal conflict between my critical parent and my resistant child. And that's a problem I have continued to have. I had high expectations of myself and was very self-critical. I felt guilty about everything, wrong, bad, worthless, useless, a waste of space. I was depressed and suicidal even at a very young age. I started skipping school in the first grade and wanted to jump off the suicide bridge starting around the second grade. Didn't really want to kill myself, but I did want to be dead. I just wanted the pain to stop, and being dead was the only way I could think to make it stop. There wasn't alcohol or drug abuse in my family for several generations back, but there was an addiction to appearance, control, manipulation, being right, looking good. My parents grew up in dysfunctional families, and they passed on the dysfunction to us. There was probably alcoholism in the family some generations back because my parents have all the traits of adult children. They're adult children of adult children of adult children. Go back a few generations. went to college. I went on a religious mission for 2 years to please my parents, thinking, oh, maybe then they'll love me. They didn't. I married a man I didn't love in a fundamentalist religious cult because I thought it was God's will at the time. I started drinking. I had my beautiful son and left that marriage and the cult after less than 3 years. I got into therapy 4 years later, and that helped me identify my feelings and learn to express them. After I'd been in therapy for a couple of years, I was having a conversation with my parents who were staying with me for a few days, and I told my mom that I felt like she had treated me like a criminal my whole life, and I was wondering what my crime was. And I expected her to just say, I don't know what you're talking about, but she didn't. She said, without skipping a beat, you single-handedly ruined my life from day one. She didn't deny it. She didn't say, oh, you're just imagining things. No, with that one statement, she was acknowledging that she had treated me like a criminal, and here's my crime. I said to her, I don't accept. I'm not responsible for how your life turned out. If your life is ruined, you have only yourself to blame. I wish now I had terminated our relationship at that point, but I still had a lot of work to do on myself before I got that healthy. 4 years later, I married my second husband, an alcoholic. He quit drinking after we got together, but he never got treatment or went to 12-step. That marriage lasted 5 years. I, again, had trouble with commitment, intimacy, didn't really like being married. I was determined to be a better parent than my parents had been, and to some degree I succeeded, but of course I made mistakes. I, like them, was addicted to control, being right, and other people's approval. I was a frightened parent who thought my son should behave in certain ways, and I am ashamed to admit that I spanked him when I felt he had to be controlled. I would insist on winning arguments with him, being right, but I was determined that he would know that he was loved, something I didn't feel while I was growing up. My parents didn't contribute. They insisted that we got a college education, all three of us, but they didn't contribute anything to it. And that was really hard. You know, it's hard to work for minimum wage because you don't have the education to make enough to pay for an education, so you can make enough to pay for an education. It's kind of, and I didn't want that for him, so I supported him through college. And he invited me to his graduation in 2007. At that time, he wanted to sever emotional ties with me. Of course, I was devastated, hurt, angry, resentful, and confused. I had just finished paying for his college education, and I felt I was being kicked to the curb now that he didn't need my money anymore. I didn't understand, and he didn't explain. But that was what got me into recovery. He was in school in Humboldt County. Lots of marijuana available. He was smoking pot every day. Oh, it must be the drugs. He's not thinking straight, I told myself. I would like to be in some kind of a support group or counseling. Couldn't afford that. Oh, but I remembered there's something for people like me. So I looked online and found an Al-Anon group, and that's how I got into recovery. And I added Al-Anon, CODA, and some AA meetings to my recovery program. When I heard about ACA and that it's also for those from dysfunctional families, I ran right home and ordered a big book. When it came in the mail, I started reading it and found myself on every page. But it was too much for me at the time, so I set it aside. That was in 2010, and there weren't any ACA meetings in this area yet. So I continued with my recovery and the other fellowships until ACA came to Santa Barbara. Since I live in Buellton, it was difficult to get to the meetings, and since I wanted meetings closer to me with help from friends, I started an ACA meeting in Solvang in September of 2013. And around that time, a friend said, as long as you've been in recovery and as hard as you've been working, I wonder why you're not getting it any more than you do. Could it be that your drinking is getting in the way? Interesting question. So I quit drinking for a couple of weeks. That was fine. One hot day, came home and had a couple of margaritas, didn't like how I felt the next day. Huh, wonder if it could be the alcohol. Maybe not. So I drank that day, felt bad the next day too. Oh, I bet it is the alcohol. So that was the last drink I had, and that was in October of 2013. I told you about coming home and writing down my story and kept adding to it as I remembered things. I never thought I would write my history, but here I am. It has been a very interesting process. Having it down in writing for me to read seems to confirm the truth of what happened to me in a way that talking about it doesn't. I'm telling my story, it's usually, you know, a 5-minute share at a time. And it's not the whole thing in one place at one time. I think I understand now why people write their biographies. Something tangible somebody can point to and say, this is my story. Right here. I'm noticing little Allison likes that I'm writing her story. It's getting written down and is finally being told. It's being made real, listened to, and validated. But those are big people words. She feels heard and she feels real. And now she is beginning to reveal the really deep pain that has been repressed all these years. I think she now trusts that I hear her and care enough to write down her story. No one has ever cared about her like that before. The Big Red Book talks about the return of our true selves, and it feels like that's what's happening to me now. So I recommend it. Might not work the same way for you. That's how it worked for me. Preparing this talk, I was going over the 14 traits, and I've got them all. I became isolated, afraid of people, afraid of authority figures, and because of my fear of authority figures, I got sneaky. In order to do what I wanted to do at home, you know, if it wasn't going to hurt anybody, and I wasn't, you know, I may or may not get in trouble if it got found out, I would go ahead and do it. Because it seemed like, you know, if I brought to my parents' attention that I was interested in doing something, oh, there'd be discussion and resistance and probably not be able to do it, so I would just go do it. I became an approval seeker, losing my identity, frightened by angry people when mom and dad were angry, especially mom, felt like the love got withdrawn. I mean, that was one of the consequences of making her angry. I felt like she didn't love me anymore. Personal criticism, same thing. Became an alcoholic and married one. And he was a rager. I felt like a victim and was attracted to victims. I would, see some really troubled person and think, oh, I can probably save him. You know, I can explain to him why he behaves, why he does. He'll be so grateful that he'll love me and things will turn out great. Overdeveloped sense of responsibility, that I just described, caretaking, controlling, helping, and being a know-it-all. I used to, I'd overhear conversations, places, and people saying things that just wasn't accurate, you know, about the weather or traffic, and I would do them the favor of turning to them and say, oh no, that's not right. And share my wisdom with them. I was always surprised that they weren't grateful, but they weren't. It took me a long time to figure out, nobody likes a know-it-all. I felt guilty when I stood up for myself. Addicted to excitement, the way I would create crisis was by procrastinating. I confused love and pity, and we talked about that, rescuing people. I can save you from your past. Stuffed my feelings. I didn't know that I was doing that. I thought I had total recall of everything that happened to me and all the feelings about it. I was crying all the time when I was a child. So, you know, it seemed obvious to me that I was remembering and experiencing those feelings. But I'll explain later how I found out that wasn't entirely true. And as an adult, I avoided feelings by drinking. Happiness, sadness, anger, depression, loneliness. Take a drink, everything's better. Judge myself harshly, low sense of self-esteem. very dependent, terrified of abandonment, but paradoxically also terrified of intimacy. So, you know, I want you just so close, but not too close. Oh, that's a little too close. Back off. Oh, but don't go away. I took on the characteristics of the dysfunction in the family, became a reactor rather than an actor. And I was reading through the solutions, and something interesting I discovered, or the solution, you know, the solution that we all heard here tonight, that the solution is great because it also has sort of promises in it. In other words, the solution is to become my own loving parent. And then it goes on to say that ACA, as ACA becomes a safe place for me, oh, that's lovely. I find the freedom to express all the hurts and fears I have kept inside. That's great. It's a safe place. And I trust people in my meetings. I can free myself from the shame and blame that are carryovers from the past. That's a promise. I become an adult imprisoned no longer by childhood reactions. Another one. Recover the child within me. Another one. Learn to accept and love myself. Another one. And the healing begins. When we risk moving out of isolation. And great way to do that is by going to meetings using the phone. Then here come more promises. Feelings and buried memories will return. When we release the burden of unexpressed grief, we move out of the past. We learn to reparent ourselves with gentleness, humor, love, and respect. And this allows me to see my biological parents as the instruments of my existence, while my actual parent is a higher power who gave me the 12 steps of recovery. More promises. So again, here are some parts of the solution: using the steps, meetings, and the phone, sharing my experience, strength, and hope, learning to restructure my sick thinking one day at a time, releasing my parents from responsibility for my actions today. That was hard, but it's coming. Then more promises. I become free to make healthful decisions. I become an actor, not a reactor. I progress from hurting to healing to helping. I awaken to a sense of wholeness I never knew was possible by attending meetings on a regular basis. I come to see that family dysfunction for what it is, a disease that infected me as a child and continues to affect me as an adult. Another promise, I learn to keep the focus on myself in the here and now by taking responsibility for my own life and supplying my own parenting. More blessings and promises. I will not do this alone. Others know how I feel. Others love and encourage me no matter what. I accept you just as you accept me. And this is a spiritual program based on action coming from love. And as the love grows inside me, I will see beautiful changes in all my relationships. And the promises are starting to come true. Thanks. Accepting myself, loving myself, self-esteem increasing. Let me get to the good stuff. Where is it? Where's my last page? Oh no. Some of the tools that have helped me are going to a lot of meetings, and there aren't a lot of ACA meetings up where I am. I'd love to be able to go to an ACA meeting every day. That would be my dream come true. But there aren't any. The closest one is in Orchid. I live in Buellton. And I am fortunate to be part of a 12-step study group. We're working in the yellow spiral brown 12-step workbook. But I have been going to meetings in another fellowship almost every day, which has been really, really helpful because we study the steps, we study the traditions. They're almost the same steps and traditions, and getting that foundation and that knowledge is really helpful. And there is something about going to meetings that makes my life better. I haven't really figured out what the connection is, but it does. When I don't go to meetings, I don't feel as good. When I'm going to meetings, wonderful things happen. Santa brought me a ticket to the convention that's coming up. That wouldn't have, I can't help but think that there's a connection between heightened activity and good stuff happening in my life. I'm working now, and I went to our company holiday party earlier this month, and they had a raffle. There were a number of different items being raffled off, and one of them was a 32-inch television. Well, I've been wanting a wall-mounted flat-screen TV. That looks like something I'd really like to have. So we were given free raffle tickets, and I put all my tickets in the TV, and they pulled tickets for all the other gifts, and that was the big ticket item, so it was the last one. I won a 32-inch TV. And again, I don't think that would have happened if I wasn't active and, really working a strong program, working the steps, going to meetings, using the telephone. We've got the tools, we've got the sort of the blueprint, the map, the guidelines for recovery. Another thing that's been helpful for me is that critical parent voice has just been relentless. That's another thing that's been difficult for me. All those memories from when just trying to do some household chore, like vacuuming, dusting, doing the dishes. The voices were relentless. Even if I would get myself to do the chore, they would come afterward and say, "You didn't do enough. You should have done it more. You should have done it sooner. You should have done it better. Why didn't you do something else? Why did you pick that to do?" I mean, it was like, "Oh, will you give me a break?" And I had tried a number of techniques with them, press the stop button on a pretend tape recorder or talk back to the voices. "Will you shut up? Fuck you," all that. And that would help for a little while, but they would come back. I would drink when I was still drinking. That would quiet them enough for me to get the job done, but I don't drink anymore. So that was not a very good solution. And what finally worked, a sponsor suggested that I determine whose voice this was. Well, of course, it's Mom's voice. "And why do you think she was saying these things to you?" "Because it's how she'd been treated. She thought that this is what you do when you're a good parent. These are the things that you say." And I came to understand that she wanted to be a good parent, and she wanted me to grow up to be a good person. And the sponsor encouraged me to say things like, "Thank you, Mom. I hear you. I know you're only saying this because you love me and you have my best interest at heart." That was very difficult to say because I didn't feel grateful. I felt resentful and hateful about both my mother and her voice that was still in my head. But I was able to get myself to say, "Thank you, Mom. I know you just have my..." And it was amazing. Eventually, the voices have stopped. And I think they just wanted to be heard, acknowledged, honored. Once they were heard, there was nothing left to say. They didn't have a job anymore. So that was a relief. And another thing that I have done, I have done some work on developing a concept of my inner loving parent. What would the characteristics of a loving parent be? What would they be like? They would be kind, generous, loving, helpful, supportive. Long list, 2 pages, several pages, more pages. Writing my story, my inner child has started to make an appearance. And I've gotten in the habit of giving myself the praise and saying the things to myself that I would have wanted to hear when I was a child. Oh, you are so, I just love you. You're so pretty and so smart and so talented. I just love the way you put that over there. That was just so clever. And on and on. I mean, as I'm going throughout my day when I'm doing those hated chores, really talking to myself that way. And it is an amazing thing for my self-esteem. It's like, these are things that children are probably dying to hear all the time that I didn't hear, that I can give to myself now, and love and encouragement for my inner child. So again, thanks for being here. I'm very, very grateful for 12-step, for the recovery program. I thank God every day for the two people who started the grandma of the of all the 12-step programs, and speaking in front of people also is a big boost to my recovery. It gives me the opportunity to look at where I've been, what I've done, and where I am now, and somehow just gives my recovery a big boost. So I recommend it. If you're asked to speak, it's a good thing, good recovery thing to do. So thanks.